and welcome to episode 63 of Did You Bring the Hummus podcast. I'm Kimberly, your host, and I'm super excited to be here with you today. Did You Bring the Hummus is a podcast to help you go vegan. Most importantly, we'll talk about how to embrace this meaningful decision with fervor and fun. Episodes post every Monday on your favorite podcast app. Before we get started, I have one very important question for you. Did you bring the hummus? Today, I am joined by Kathleen Gage, founder of Vegan Visibility and co-founder of Vegan Visibility Productions. Kathleen is a highly seasoned business consultant, keynote speaker, author, marketing strategist, and visibility mentor. Kathleen is also the founder of the Vegan Visibility Virtual Summit. The summit is a vegan and plant-based niched event featuring top marketers, PR experts, and promotions consultants who join together to bring top quality training to vegan entrepreneurs. Establishing her business in 1994, Kathleen has not only survived the ups and downs of the economy through timely reinvention, she has thrived by consulting and speaking in various industries, including high tech, digital marketing, art, music, publishing, government, healthcare, pet services, environmental, health and fitness, spiritual, and manufacturing, among others. As the host of two popular podcast shows, Vegan Visibility and Plant-Based Eating for Health, Kathleen uses the power of her voice to amplify the importance of taking a stand for a more sustainable, compassionate, and healthy world. With a global reach, Kathleen has coached and consulted thousands of individuals, incorporating her passion for business, healthy living, and her love of animals into her product and service offerings. Her holistic approach and wealth of experience make her a trusted advisor and mentor to aspiring entrepreneurs seeking to make a positive impact in the world. In addition to her podcasting ventures, Kathleen is a prolific author with over a dozen books to her name. She is a highly accomplished content creator and an expert in creating compelling marketing strategies that drive results. As an award-winning speaker, Kathleen is the past president of the Utah chapter of the National Speakers Association. She is also an award-winning entrepreneur and author. Kathleen knows what it takes to be recognized for excellence in various areas of business. Kathleen resides in a small farming community in Central Oregon, has a passion for outdoor activities, and continues to be a voice for the voiceless, not only in her business, but through her dedication to her rescued animals, including horses, chickens, dogs, and cats, who have found a safe haven on her property. Pretty impressive, right? Well, wait until you meet her. This conversation with Kathleen is heartfelt, genuine, and informative. And we have some pretty good laughs, too. Hey, Kathleen. Thanks for joining me. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Kimberly. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you here. So my first question always on Did You Bring the Hummus is to ask the guests to share their vegan journey. Tell me how you got here.
Wow. You know, it only took nearly 64 years for me to get it. That was 5 years ago. And it just was an incredible journey because when I first heard about vegans, I wanted nothing to do with vegans. I thought they were crazy. I thought they pushed their agenda. Everything that we now hear as vegans, and it's so interesting being on the other side of the equation, but I actually started as a result of having inflammation. I was 64 at the time, and I was getting terrible inflammation in my wrist, and I'm a writer. And I thought, okay, there's got to be a solution that's other than medication, because I just don't like doing prescription drugs. So I did some research, and everything I read indicated that if I gave up all meat and dairy, that it would clear up the inflammation. So I thought, I'll try it for a little while. I'll give it 7 days and see if it works. And what's interesting, Kimberly, is I actually have been rescuing animals for decades. And I've rescued horses, dogs, cats, ferrets, goats. I mean, you name it, we've definitely rescued it. And yet I didn't connect the dots between rescuing and eating, which, you know, for me now, I have to have more empathy for the people who haven't quite gotten it. So anyway, I thought I'll give it 7 days. And after 7 days, actually, it was after about 2 days, the inflammation was gone. And I'm like, this is really bizarre. And so after 7 days, I was feeling better than I had in a while. I have been a runner for a while, slow runner. I always come in last when I do races. And the pain in my legs were going away. And just things were just starting to shift. And I noticed that I hadn't had a headache in nearly a week. And it was like, oh, this is interesting. So I thought I'll try it for another 7 days, and tried it for another seven. And I was releasing weight. I was feeling better. I was sleeping better. Everything that you read that happens was happening. And then I started doing the research. And that's when I had such a, if you will, an epiphany of like what I had been doing for so many years, and now realizing that I had been contributing to the cruelty of animals. And here I said I loved animals. And so I just dug deep. I started watching the documentaries. I read a lot of books. The one book that really influenced my eating was Eat to Live by Dr. Joel Fuhrman. But the movies that made a difference was, let's see, there's Dominion was one of them. What the Health was one of them. You name it, I probably watched it. And the more I watched, the sadder I became, because I realized I had been contributing for so many years. And it was actually when I was at the grocery store about 6 months into my journey that I was walking by the meat department to go to another department. And I literally stopped in my tracks, and I could feel the pain and suffering. And it was in that moment I said, I'm a vegan, and have not looked back. And I, you know, I've had people say, well, isn't it hard? You know, and where do you get your protein? You know, the usual fare. But on being hard, absolutely not. Once I really identified what being vegan meant, it was, and then I became a little radicalized. It was like, okay, now everybody should become vegan. Yeah, oh my gosh. And so, you know, really, it's been over 5 years now. And in that time, I've had many layers being removed of what the truth is. Like, I'm just recently starting to discover about cruise ships, the destruction that they cause to the animals, the sea life, the whales, the porpoises, the dolphins, the mantos? What are I'm trying to think of the name of the sea creature. It's a mammal, but a lot of these animals are beaching themselves and dying as a result of this sound that comes from the ships. So, you know, that's just one more layer as a vegan that I feel fortunate that I'm being exposed to that information.
Yeah. It's incredible learning, isn't it? And it makes you look at yourself.
Oh, yes. Hold up that mirror.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then you look around at the people you love. And like you said, at first you became a little radicalized. And I said, as we all do, because I remember that too. I was the one who somebody would offer me an animal-based meal, and I would say, I don't eat anything with a face, or I don't eat anything that had a mother. And no thank you, like right in their face. Like, here's why I'm not doing it. And you want to shout it from the rooftops because you've just learned it, and it feels so empowering as well as scary and sad. And you're like, oh my God, what have I been contributing to my whole life? But you want everyone to know. And it's like, why aren't people listening to me? And it's because we're yelling at them.
You know, they're not listening to us for the same reason we didn't listen to other vegans, and we didn't want anything to do with vegans, because I truly thought that vegans were pushing their agenda. And now that I'm on the other side of the equation, like I mentioned, it really is empathizing with people and looking at how long it took me. You know, I have a friend who is nearly 80, and she's the one who told me about the cruise lines. And I said, well, how long have you known this? She said, and she's really like, you know, people have to stop doing cruises, and she's really upset about it. And she's very much a in your face kind of vegan, and God love her. I mean, she's done so many amazing things. She's been vegan for 35 years. And she said 6 months. And I said, so you were close to 80 years old when you found out why would you expect people to learn any sooner? So I think that's, you know, really the perspective is realizing, yes, the animals are suffering, but if we turn people away, we're not going to be able to accomplish mm-hmm. as much. So I think for me, I have to remind myself, there's a lot of ways to do activism. And for me, I do it through my podcast show. I do it through coming on podcast. I do it through writing blog posts. I do it through having conversations at the grocery store. Almost every time I go to the grocery store, I have people comment on my energy or, you know, mm-hmm. like whatever it may be, like, oh, look at all those fruits and vegetables in your cart. My gosh. And then I can strike up a conversation. Or yeah. I was at Safeway recently, and the clerk was like, oh my gosh, I'm so in so much ache, pain. I'm going through menopause. I'm having hot flashes. And she's going on and on. And I said, you know, I went through the same thing, but I discovered something that was better than any drug you could take. And she goes, really, what is it? I said, do you really want to know? And she goes, yeah, I want to know. And I said, plant-based eating. She goes, well, what's that? And I explained it to her, and I explained it in a way that she was at least open to hearing. Mm-hmm. And usually what I'll do, and I want to get a card made up with all the different books that I recommend, because yeah. I usually write down the name of a book or a website or something that I could give them resources to actually help them on their journey.
I love that. What a great idea. And by the way, today, this 5 minutes ago or however long it's been, is when I learned about the cruise ships. I didn't know that sound, and that makes perfect sense, right? They use sound to communicate. So to have this, like I imagine, just constantly in their head all the time has to be distressing.
It really is. And in addition to that, Kimberly, it's the amount of waste that goes into the ocean, because yeah. a lot of these cruise lines, they throw the feces and the urine and all that and the food scraps, they throw it into the ocean. And that's just, and we get plastic islands as a result mm-hmm. of it. There is one cruise line that's doing quite a bit to raise awareness around sustainability and plant-based eating. It's Windstar. They've actually partnered with National Health Association, where they do all plant exclusive cruises. And it's like, oh my gosh, the executive director, Wanda Huberman, she actually has been working with them, and they do cruises. And there are some people who say, oh, how can you be plant-based and vegan and do these cruises? And she said, we're educating them on having more sustainable cruises. So I think it's really important for me, I have to remember, it's not black and white. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of areas of gray. And again, if we approach it from the perspective of educating people and raising awareness. Now, if we see an animal suffering, that's one thing. I mean, step right in. If I see an elderly person being abused in any way, a child or animals, there are things that we can do in that moment. But overall, it's really looking at what's the most effective way to educate people.
Mm-hmm. I love that your perspective is from this education piece. And just listening to you speak and thinking about approaching someone the way I approach someone, the way people have approached me, it really takes down those walls. Because especially when we can share, you know, as a vegan, like all of us, we're like, oh, I wish I'd done it sooner.
Right.
And I do, because I hate to think about all of the animals that I cause direct suffering for. But at the same time, I'm thankful for that journey, because when I talk to someone and they're like, isn't it so hard? How could I ever do this? I can say, hey, when I decided to go vegetarian, I did it overnight. I had no idea how to cook. I didn't eat vegetables. Everything I ate was like, you know, a cheeseburger, a turkey sandwich. Like I was not eating these giant bowls of food. It wasn't normal for me to eat the way right. I do now. And I had no idea how to cook. So it shows them like, oh, okay. You don't have to be some like elite person or special person or already a chef in order to do this.
You know, you just hit on a really important point in that you don't have to be some elite person or you don't have to be, you don't have to have a lot of money to be able to be vegan, because some people say it's a very elitist group of people mm-hmm. or, you know, it's very Only the people who have a lot of money are able to be vegans. It's like, no, that's not true, because there are many, many cost-effective ways to eat very healthy beans and legumes in bulk. I love the name of your show, because I just made, for the first time ever, I made homemade hummus. And nice. I'll save that for later. But it was like, oh my gosh, that's the reason I did it, was because it's more cost-effective than buying it at the store. And I thought, I'm going to try this. And it actually came out pretty darn good.
Awesome.
I think it's really important for people to consider that maybe there is a cost-effective way of doing this, because I know that there are redlined communities that truly are redlined, and you'll find it's easier to find a store with beer and cigarettes and a lot of alcohol than it is an apple. I mean, I know that exists, and you know, that's there's a whole backstory behind that. There's a great movie called They're Trying to Kill Us by I think John Lewis.
The badass vegan.
Yeah, a phenomenal, phenomenal movie. And it's a real eye opener, because you're going, oh my gosh, this is like, and they don't want to teach race theory in school. It's right. Like they have to teach it, because there's so much of that. We've been lied to a lot by our government, by our healthcare, by big pharma. And if people would at least consider that, well, maybe if we have been lied to, let me look at things from a different perspective. For example, if you watch TV, pay attention to the commercials that are back to back. First, you're going to have a fast food restaurant commercial with lots of cheese, pizza, or McDonald's, or whatever it may be. And then that's going to be followed by a diabetes commercial, diabetes medication commercial, by high blood pressure commercial, by heart disease commercial. And it's like, okay, do you see what's happening? And most people don't. Right. And if you say it, they go, oh, that's conspiracy theory. It's like, no, step back and just take a look. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the beauty of having shows like yours, is that we can educate people. And if it's entertaining, they're going to listen, and maybe they'll learn something in the process.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I do it, right? I hope that people are inspired, that they learn, that they ask questions, and that they do their own research, or reach out to me or someone from the show, where they feel comfortable, like, hey, this person, I really relate to them. And I want to learn more about how they did it, or what resources they used, and just to open up this dialogue and let us have a real conversation. And there are so many difficult conversations to have around this. Like you touched on it just a moment ago, there's so much racism in our food system. Yes. And it's just the cruelty to the animals, the cruelty to the people that are in the system, not the ones who own the big companies, but the ones who are working at the slaughterhouses and the factory farms. They're suffering everywhere.
You know, it's interesting, because that's an area that a lot of times people don't look at. The victims are also the people that are working there, because most of those people would not choose to work in a slaughterhouse. And so, and I'm trying to think what documentary really covered that, and what books. There's a book, Eternal Treblinka, I believe it is, it's about people that were in Auschwitz and in the Holocaust, and how many of the Holocaust survivors actually are vegan. I actually interviewed a woman who was written about in the book, and just phenomenal, phenomenal woman. And what's interesting is that in the slaughterhouses, oftentimes the people, out of their own protection, they become very sadistic. And it's not because they want to, but it's because it's their survival mechanism. And oftentimes illegal immigrants are hired into slaughterhouses with no health care, with no protections. I mean, when you really dig deep and you look at all of the stuff that's going on, it's like, oh my gosh, I can't say that I 100% feel sorry for the people there, but in some ways I do. Mm-hmm. But there are some people that they're just down and out sadistic kind of people. But there's a higher rate of alcoholism and drug abuse. There's a higher rate of spousal abuse, because you figure you go from the slaughterhouse and you go home. What are you going to do at home? I mean, who are you going to take it out on? Yeah. And especially if you really don't want to be there, but you're being forced to be there, in a sense, being forced. So I think that it really is a matter of looking at human rights, animal rights, just, you know, all sentient being rights.
Yeah. Yeah. People say, like, oh, vegans only care about animals. What about the people? there are so many people who would benefit too from changing how our food system works, changing up the farming, starting to farm vegetables, you know, grains. So we do care. And so many of us are not, like, you have to pick one thing very often, right? We all have lives, we have a job, we've got families, we've got responsibilities, things that we have to, you know, we got to time manage things. So you can't be the advocate in all of the areas. So you pick one, but that doesn't mean that you're not involved here and there, or that it doesn't intersect, right? There's so much intersectionality.
You're hitting such important points, because I know that when I've done, let's say, some advocacy work around animals, and people say, well, what about the children? And it's like, well, just because I'm doing one doesn't mean I don't care about something else. And who know, you know, people don't know who you donate to. They don't know where you put your time. And so it isn't black and white. I mean, there's so many different ways that we can get involved. And like you said, we have to pick a lane, if you will, and go deep into that lane, because otherwise we get too scattered, and it can become very depressing. If we really look at what the truth of everything is, it can become so overwhelming. And I know there's times that, like with what's going on right now in the Middle East, in with Gaza, I have woken up just with such anxiety, because I care so much about what's happening. And it's like, what can I do? It's like, I don't know what to do. And there's times that there's a situation that we just say, I don't know what to do. Help me out here. What can I do? And so I think the number one thing that we can do is start with being the most loving that we can be by not eating animals, because right there's a domino effect of when you put that into your body, when you're putting death and suffering in your body, it's got to come out some way. And so I think the first step is for us to have a level of consciousness and awareness that we're not putting death into our bodies, because it really, there's a very spiritual aspect of being vegan. You know, I've been on a spiritual journey for, gosh, ever since I can remember. I mean, my first experience with, you know, knowing that there was something beyond where we're at was when I was 9. I had a death and dying experience. And, you know, so that was almost 60 years ago. It was 60 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I look at that, and I went on this whole spiritual journey in my life. And I actually was in Israel back in 1983. I lived on a moshav for 6 months on the West Bank. And I worked with Palestinians. I worked with Jewish people from Israel. And it was just such an incredible experience. And I was on my way to India. I had flunked geography in school. I was probably high at the time. I've been sober 40 years. I mean, you know, there's so many different aspects to my life. But the fact is that as I've gone through my spiritual practices in life, I would say becoming a vegan, making the choice, the conscious choice to be vegan, and making that choice every single day is a very spiritual thing to do.
I agree. And I didn't realize it, though. For me, I think it was happening, and I felt more connected to the world, to the animals, to people I love, just kind of everything, without understanding that that's what I was doing.
Right.
And it didn't happen for me, my like spiritual moment, awakening, if you will, until my soul cat Cookie passed away in 2020. Mm. And this idea that this perfect little cat just didn't exist anymore, I couldn't handle that. I didn't like that. I didn't want that to be the case. And I had already done some Reiki training. So like, I was already doing these things. I'm totally not connecting. Like, hey, you're kind of doing a spiritual thing. Like, what's going on with you? And since then, now that connection and being able to talk about it better because I'm understanding what I'm doing. Like, when I think about veganism, the idea of consuming someone versus consuming something. So, you know, what a significant difference in the energy and the person that I was when I was eating animals, not even realizing, like you'd said before, this, you know, you're consuming this death and destruction, this pain and anguish. And like, where does that go?
You know, one of the things that I've had to really keep a check on is not getting triggered by the ignorance of the non-vegans, that the ignorance that I used to walk in. I mean, mm-hmm. I used to make fun of vegans, and it was like, if there was, you know, I mean, some of the stuff I did was kind of horrendous. And I look at the people that now, let's say that somebody posts a picture of a cute little piglet and says, you know, I'm a friend, not food, and that kind of, and then you, of course, you have the people that come on and put pictures of bacon and all that. And I have to be careful not to engage on that level with people, because that's what they want. Mm-hmm. And I had a situation recently where I belonged to a very, very high-end women's organization, and I'm a VIP member, and you pay extra money to be a VIP member. And I did that many, many years ago. And recently they were putting pictures up of bacon. And people were making all these comments about, ooh, bacon, and, you know, I'll have five orders of bacon. And finally, after about the 10th one, I posted and I put a picture of, I think, a piglet. And I said, you know, I have to let people know that when you post pictures of bacon, it really hurts. And here's why it hurts. And so and that was it. You know, mm-hmm. I wasn't judging anybody. I said, I just needed you to know how I'm feeling. And at first nobody engaged. And then finally somebody said, that took a lot of courage, Kathleen. And I'm like, why? You know, I just was stating something. Then somebody comes out and says, it's my right to post pictures about bacon. And I'm like, ooh, okay. And then it got into this battle. Well, then the owner of the organization, she comes on and she said, you know, you're entitled to your feelings, Kathleen, but I have to tell you, I don't agree with you. And I'm like, wow, what is going on here? Well, it turns out, I didn't know this, but it turns out that the theme of the month is bacon. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I never even realized it. And I actually was going to pull out of the organization because of that. And then I thought, wait a minute, maybe I can do more good by staying in and educating people in a non judgmental way. But what I found really interesting is that the founder of the organization she had this lunch pail filled with bacon. This was like a real lunch pail filled with bacon. And she was sharing it with somebody. She goes, ooh, I love bacon. And I thought, wow, the amount of influence that you have, and you're so clueless as to how cruel what you're doing actually is. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking at it as an opportunity at some point, I might be able to educate some of those people on, you know, what that really means and how much it actually does hurt for us who are vegan to see people making fun of bacon. Yeah. Because, you know, it's so far removed from what that animal goes through. And a lot of people, even though they've heard it, they don't want to believe it. Yep. And if they deny it, then they can keep doing what they're doing. It's just like somebody who might have a drinking problem that, you know, they know that they should give up drinking. They know that it causes problems. They know there's a lot that goes with it. And yet they just choose to ignore it until they get into so much trouble. And with veganism, it could be around their health. It could be around, you know, whatever it may be. Look at what's going on in the world right now with the climate. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. And there are climate deniers. It's like, what? So obviously I am rather passionate about the topic, but I've also, I've really worked on being as effective as I can be without judging people, because when you judge and when you make people wrong, they tend to want to do more of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's almost, I think it almost feels spiteful at that point, right? They're like, I'm going to go home and eat a bacon sandwich because Kathleen posted this.
You know what? That's exactly it. Well, here's to you, Kathleen.
Yep.
You know, I remember years ago, one of my spiritual teachers said, you know, when you resent somebody else, you're not hurting them. You're giving them free rent in your brain. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, wow. You know, and so those people who are doing that, I don't even know they're doing it, but doggone it. You know, it's like they're getting that cholesterol.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they're thinking about you. Yeah. So maybe in that moment, they're like, I'm going to eat this bacon sandwich. I don't care what Kathleen says about mm-hmm. hurting anybody or whatever, but right. maybe something else will happen in their life and it will remind them and they'll go, oh, absolutely. I think I get it now.
You know, and I think that's when we get those aha moments. It's like we might have read something, we might have heard something, we might have seen a meme on Twitter, maybe a TikTok video. And at first we're just, shying away from it and just saying, no, I don't want to see that. But somewhere it goes into our subconscious mind. And that's why it really is important for people to be aware of the commercials that they're being subjected to. Because I think it's two countries that allow advertising for big pharma. One is New Zealand and one is the United States. And what's so interesting is we're one of the richest countries in the world, but we have one of the sickest countries in the world. And, big pharma has a lot to do with that. So I would encourage people to just open your eyes a little bit, open your ears, and pay attention to what you're being subjected to without even knowing that you're being subjected to it.
Yeah, that's a great, great suggestion. And ask questions. Why am I seeing this? What does this mean? Who is funding this?
Ooh, yes.
So I wanted to, you mentioned your age a couple of times. And one of the things that we briefly touched on in our pre-podcast interview was kind of aging as a vegan and how good it is. And so I want you to tell me more about, you said a little earlier how much better you were feeling, the inflammation right. went away, but like, what's it like now?
Well, I'm going to be 70 in May, and I have to tell you that blows me away, because it's like, I remember my mother used to always say, she'd look at somebody her age and she goes, "Do I look that old?" And I do the same thing. It's like, do I look 70? I don't know. But this morning I started my day by going to the gym. I enjoy a good run near the river. I have more energy. I feel like I'm reversing the aging process. And it's interesting, Kimberly, because I can tell when I eat unhealthy vegan food. So it's not just about being vegan. For me, it is about being a whole food plant-based eater. Like right now, I've got my green drink right here. Nice. And I produce a podcast show for the National Health Association. And recently we had Dr. Brooke Goldner, who was one of the guests, and her episode will be going live very shortly. And it was a real eye-opener to hear her talk about green smoothies. And she actually reversed lupus. And she's very into more raw vegan than anything but whole food raw vegan. And because, I guess you can't eat beans raw. You have to cook those. Yeah. But the whole thing for me is, mine is about the compassion first, and it's about health. Right up there too, because if I'm an unhealthy vegan, there's a lot I won't be able to do as an advocate. And Linda Middlesworth, the vegan who's nearly 80 years old, she's been vegan 35 years. You look at her and you go, if that's 80, I can't wait to get there. This woman is, she teaches aerobic. She does wow. kickboxing. She's just an incredible advocate for the animals. But what I have discovered is the healthier I eat and the more plants I put into my body, the younger I feel and the more energy I have and the more I'm able to do what I'm here to do.
That is beautiful. I love that.
But I got to wonder, do I look like those other 70-year-olds? But the gym that I go to, what I love about it, I go to the YMCA, and what I love about it, we have a lot of older people there. There's people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s and beyond. I mean, and it's just, I sit there in awe of the really old ones and just go, oh my gosh, you are a rock star. The fact that you're here at the gym, and you may not be moving as fast as you used to move, but my gosh, you're moving, and that's a good thing. And, I look at that, and that's what I aspire to be. I aspire to be that 100-year-old woman that did the 100-yard dash, and she set a world record. The only reason she said it was nobody else at 100 ever did that. And, oh, wow. And God bless her. It's like, oh my gosh, that is so awesome. So I look to people that are older than me that are doing amazing things, and I say, that's what I want to do.
Yeah. So good. I mean, you got me thinking. So I interviewed Victoria Moran not too long ago.
Yes.
And Victoria is in her 70s and she's been vegan for 30 years. So someone might say, well, Victoria feels the way she does because she's been vegan for so long. But you've just demonstrated that you've only been vegan for like 5 years, and look at what a significant difference and what it's made for you. So it's like, it's never too late. So I don't want to hear that excuse, right?
Absolutely. And the thing that's really interesting is if people, like with Dr. Brooke Goldner, what she does is she has a 6-week protocol to help people to really reverse things quickly. And she works with people who have lupus, heart conditions, diabetes, all of that. And within a very short period of time, they've seen incredible reversals, but hers is I'm trying to think of what they call it. It's something nutrition, like massive nutrition or something. Okay. And there's a term that she created, and she said what they do is they pump the body full of all the nutrients that people are missing. She goes, oftentimes it's not what you need to give up, it's what you need to put into your body. And for example, omega-3s with flaxseed and chia seeds. It's like our bodies crave omega-3s, and most people do not have enough omega-3s. But it's like with my green drink here, I've got a lot of stuff in there. Kale is definitely in there, and I've got a lot of stuff, chia seeds, flax seeds. But I will advise people, if you're going to do the Dr. Goldner protocol, ease into it. Don't go right into it, because you will get bloated. You will have the effects of being bloated. And it's kind of like, oops, I think I overdid a little bit. So you want to follow her protocol according to the way she does it. And there's plenty of people out there like Victoria who are teaching people that, yes, in fact, as you get older, you can actually reverse the aging process. And one of the things I love, Kimberly, is that life is stressful. I mean, you know, a lot of people, when they hear a vegan talk, they think, oh, you know, so you have no problems. It's like, oh no, that's not the case at all. No. I mean, it's like when the pandemic hit, I never really feared for getting sick from COVID, whether I got it or not, because I knew that my immune system was so strong. And when we started looking at the underlying causes of the people that got sick, but what I do know is that as stressful situations happen, I can handle it with more grace, because I'm not filled with a bunch of sugar. I'm not filled with a bunch of salt that's going to make my joints achy. And so I think one of the benefits to eating a whole food plant-based vegan diet is that, and being vegan is not a diet. That's right. I want to clarify that, but the whole food plant-based is that when life happens, you don't get as stressed over it. It doesn't, you don't have those anxiety attacks that maybe you've been accustomed to in the past. It just changes so much about how you handle day-to-day situations.
Hmm. Isn't that amazing?
Absolutely. It's like a magic drug. I mean, it really is. You know, I, like I said, I've been in recovery for 40 years, and it's like, I used to always chase after that high. And this is the best high that I could get, because I have such clarity of mind. And I look at the number of people that are getting dementia and Alzheimer's, and a lot of that, they call that type 3 diabetes. And that's because it's inflammation of the brain. Inflammation comes from animal-based products. There's no two ways about it. And for people to deny that, it's like, I have a friend that he is at risk of losing his foot, at risk of losing an eye. He is diabetic, and he loves his Coca-Cola, and he loves his meat. And he said, I'm not ready to give it up. It's like, well, then.
Wow.
God bless you.
Yeah. You know? What does it take at that point?
For some people, it takes death. It really does. It's just like alcoholism. For some people, it takes death. And it just, no matter what the evidence is, they're like, well, this is what I'm choosing to do. It's like, okay, that is your choice. But with veganism, it's not just about you. It's about the animals that you're subjecting to the life that they've been forced to live. You know, these animals didn't ask to come into the world. And some people say, well, you know, are you wanting to wipe out all the animals, the factory farmed animals? Yes, I would like them to be non-existent through non-breeding.
Right. Yeah,
that would be, I actually said a very nice way of what really happens to them, because they're not necessarily bred, they're forced.
Right.
And we could go into a whole different conversation on that, but we'll stick to hummus.
Yeah. You know, talking about getting back to like whole foods and eating that way reminded me of something else that you had said about simplifying your life. And I feel like when we eat the foods that our bodies are made to eat, it does bring a simplicity. And even when we're making like super fancy food,
right,
it's still so simple and beautiful. But I want to hear what do you mean by simplifying your life?
I love the way you just put that it's beautiful. And I find that when I cook a meal for somebody now as a vegan, that there's a lot more love that goes into that meal because I'm very conscious of what the ingredients that I'm putting into it and thinking about how much they're going to enjoy it. Where back when I was a carnivore, it's like, I just throw a steak on the grill and we're good to go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, corn on the cob and we're fine, you know, and now it's like, oh, how can I make the flavors come out? Like yesterday I made a beautiful curry dish and it was just amazing. And I do a lot by intuition and I just think, what about a little of this, a little of that? Now my hummus menu, recipe, I did follow a recipe, but I would say really the whole thing about simplicity, I look for my life in general to be simple. I used to be very much, I was a keynote speaker for many, many years. And so it was all about the, you know, look at me, look at me, look at how wonderful I am as a speaker. And now it's just like, look at me so I can do what I can do for the animals. Look at me so I can do what I can do for the environment. Look at me so I can do what I can do for people's health. And it really is about just keeping things as simple as possible and having a level of gratitude of like, thank you, God, for this day. You know, God, spirit, universe, whatever people choose to identify as the deity. But it really is about giving thanks for what the blessings I have in my life, because I do live a very, very abundant life as far as like I live out in nature. I live in Oregon, in central Oregon, across from a river. We have 5 acres. We have rescue horses, chickens, dogs, a cat. And I go outside and I go, I'm so blessed. And it's kind of a funky farmhouse that I live in. So it's not like this big elaborate home. It's a funky, I live a funky little life and yet it's so simple. And it's all based on gratitude, because the more that I can focus on what I have to be grateful for, the more I have to be grateful for. It's really quite simple. And so for me, the simplicity comes from, have I started my day in a space of gratitude? And from there, just showing up and doing what's in front of me. And if I find myself getting agitated, what can I do to shift that? And oftentimes it's just going outside and just saying, thank you for this day. And my mother-in-law passed away about 8 months ago. And she actually was the first female maintenance worker for the state of California back in the day. Mm-hmm. Just an amazing, amazing woman. And very rugged, very wholesome, very healthy woman. And then she got fibrosis of the lungs. I am trying to think of the exact term of what it was, but basically she stopped being able to breathe on her own. Mm-hmm. And even when she was in a wheelchair, she goes, thank you, God, for this day. No matter how much pain she was in, she goes, thank you, God, for this day. And I learned so much about her humility in life and how gratitude was the cornerstone of everything she did. And we're still going through her personal belongings. And I'm just amazed at all the simple things that she had in her life that brought her such joy. So for me, in answer to your question, keeping it simple is about staying in gratitude.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, that feels, I can feel that. That's so wonderful. I have an on and off gratitude practice. I have a little notebook, and what I'd started doing is that I would in the morning wake up and I would write one thing I was grateful for. Mm-hmm. They say you should write mm-hmm. three, but I didn't mm-hmm. want to put too much pressure on myself when I first woke up. So I would write one thing. And then at the end of the day, I would write something else. And I would do this and then I'd kind of, you know, lose track. I skip one day and I'm like, oh, right. I'll get back to it. And you know how that goes. But when I talk to people about gratitude, and I've given speeches about it at Toastmasters and people mm-hmm. are like, oh, that's a really great way to think about this. So often I hear people go, well, I mean, how often can I say, oh, I'm so grateful for my family. I'm so grateful for my job. I'm like, yeah, of course. and you already know that you're so grateful for these things, but like, what about, did you make yourself a really nice cup of coffee this morning? Or is the sun shining through your bedroom window and it just like hits, you know, a mirror or something in the right way? And like, look for these tiny things. Did you see a flower while you were walking into your office? Is there a cloud in the sky?
That's, you know, yeah, it truly is that simple. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And you know, it's like one builds on top of the other, but it doesn't have to be some, you know, like, oh, I'm so grateful that I have, you know, this, you know, whatever, like I got a new contract with a client. Yeah, that's nice. But I'm really grateful that today I can breathe. I'm really grateful that, and I, early on when I got sober, I had a sponsor who called me on my stuff all the time. And I said, you know, I have nothing to be grateful for. She said, you are, so, you know, you're so arrogant and you're so self-centered. You need to start looking at what you have to be grateful for. I said, I have nothing to be grateful for. She goes, do you have your arms? I said, yes. Okay, there's one. Do you have your legs? Yes. Do you have your eyes? Did you sleep in a bed? And I would always go, yeah, but. And she goes, the only but that you need is the butt you sit on. That's it. And it's like, wow. Okay. Yeah. And she taught me a lot about being grateful and to really step outside of myself so that when I'm in that space of gratitude, I can help other people to be grateful too. You know, it's kind of like if I see somebody on the streets and I can pass judgment on that, or I can say, but for the grace of God, there go I, because my drinking did take me there. And I look at that and I think, you know, just being kind to somebody can go a long ways, you know, and the gratitude of thank you for this conversation, because I've had many a great conversations, very philosophical conversations where I'm listening to the other person share about their life experience. And for that, I'm grateful because I can hear it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's simple and it's incredible and it's life changing.
Absolutely. Like I like to say, absolutely tootly, you know, and actually it's funny when my nieces and nephews were younger, we used to always do gratitude time at the table when they would come to visit. It's like gratitude time. And if I forgot, they'd go, Aunt Kathy, what about gratitude time? It's like, whoa, okay, that's good. That's
that is
awesome.
Great.
Yeah.
So, Kathleen, you've mentioned a bit about your podcast and that you're a writer. Tell me more about what you do. What's your business? What's your job?
Well, my business is Vegan Visibility, and I recently partnered with a woman out of Atlanta, V. Lynn Hopkins, for Vegan Visibility Productions, and we work in the vegan space. That's who we have chosen to share our services with, and basically, we help our clients get visibility in front of their clients, and so if they're a consultant or a coach and they want to get more visibility, we work with them on their social media. Maybe they want to get on podcast shows. Maybe they want to start a podcast. And all but one of our clients are vegan. And the one client that I'm working with, I've been working with her for many, many years, and a phenomenal, phenomenal woman. But so I am a business consultant within the vegan space. In the 30 years that I've had my business, it's gone through a lot of recreations. But at one point, I was doing a lot of keynote speaking. And it's interesting because I still could do that if I wanted to. I choose not to travel right now, and it has nothing to do with COVID or anything like that. It has to do with the crazy people out there and the late flights. It's like, I just don't want to get on a plane if I don't have to. But I have been a keynote speaker. I've written many, many, many books. I've written business books, spiritual books, motivational books, and I just love to write. I mean, there is not a day that goes by that I don't write something. And so my primary focus in business is I'm a business consultant who helps my clients to gain visibility within the vegan market and the plant-based market.
Very cool. We definitely need that. There are so many incredible vegan businesses out there.
Yes.
And we don't know about all of them, or, you know, so I'm glad that you're doing that, because the more we get out there, again, we're planting seeds.
You know, and a great way to do it is to find people to collaborate with and really create a win-win-win opportunity. As a matter of fact, I myself and V. Lynn were working with five or six other people who all have plant pure pods, and they're actually expanding into teaching people how to start plant-based communities. So we're doing the marketing behind it. We set up the webpage and everything. And basically we're just, this is something we're doing because we want to do, we're not getting paid to do it. We're teaching people how to start plant-based communities, whether it be through having potlucks, through having small events, through going into schools. Merle Fury, who works with, she actually has an organization that is designed to help children to have access to plant-based meals. And she goes into the school systems and she's part of the whole thing. Maya Acosta, whose husband is vegan, and he's a, I believe he's a heart surgeon, cardiovascular doctor. And they have started many, many, many small communities and they teach people how to do this. So I feel really blessed to be able to hang out with people who have similar values and spreading the word in whatever way we can.
Yeah. So good. I'm with you too. Like hanging around with people where you don't need to explain that part of who you are and why you do the things you do. They just get it.
Right.
It's really
nice. Right. Yeah. And, you know, and you're right. People who get it, because the ones who don't get it, they don't realize that, especially friends, you know, like they go out to a restaurant and they order a steak and you're just like sometimes I won't go out with people because I know what they're going to order. And I don't want to be around that. Mm-hmm. And, so being around like-minded people is really amazing.
Have you ever had anybody apologize to you for eating animals in front of you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
It's not the worst.
Yeah, it is. It's like, well, don't apologize to me. And I've said that. I said, don't apologize to me. Why don't you apologize to that animal?
Yep, me too.
And I've had people, you know, go, oh, that's so rude. And it's like, no, really, it's not. It's rude what you're doing, you know? So yes, I have. And then of course they go, oh, you know, I tried that vegan thing once. It's like, no, you didn't try to be vegan, because once you're vegan, you're vegan. Mm-hmm. And you tried the plant-based eating, or you tried to, you know, not eat meat, but you know, there's a difference. It's a whole philosophy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I forgot about that. People apologize. Oh, sorry, I'm eating this meat. It's like, well, you're disgusting human being, you. You're terrible.
Right? Like, that's what you want to hear, right? That's why you apologized.
I know.
The idea that they think that they should apologize to you, to the vegan at the table, the royal you, right? Like, why? Why is that? Because there's guilt, but they don't want to face that there's guilt.
I think you're right. You know what I do love though is when I go to a restaurant and I say, could I get my meal without any animal-based products? Da 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 da. And there's many angles you can come from. You can say, well, you know, I have a health condition or I have a heart condition, and my heart condition is my heart breaks when I think about eating animals. But you know, I've actually been with people who go, well, she's vegan. And they're like, oh yeah, we can take care of you. And it's like, oh wow, that is so awesome. Mm-hmm. And I think more restaurants are becoming aware that if they offer that option, they're going to get more vegans coming into their restaurant. Because I've had some restaurant owners say, well, we don't have any vegans who come in. And I said, oh no, it's not that you don't know that you do, or that they don't come in because you don't make it known that you might have some vegan options. So, you know, why don't you put a small section on the menu that you can easily adapt recipes to a vegan recipe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so much easier, especially people who are working in a kitchen. They already have this knowledge of pulling food together, doing it quickly, doing it
absolutely,
you know, with flavor and like they have that experience. So, you know, like, come on.
Absolutely. Well, I go to a Mongolian grill that is so respective of the fact I'm vegan. And the guy even goes, do you do that with or without oil? And it's like, wow, thank you for asking. And I mean, and he gets clean utensils. He cleans off the part of the big, whatever that is, that they had that flame underneath. And he just is so sweet, and he will not put my food next to anybody else's food. He just gives me like half the grill, and it's like, ah, I like this guy.
Yeah.
So it's one of my regular places that I go to eat.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love it when there's something a little special like that. And they do pay attention, because you know what that means? You're going to tell people about it. You just mentioned it here on the podcast, and you know, people are going to go look that up.
They're in Springfield, Oregon, on Main Street and Fifth.
There we go.
Go see them. They're amazing. It's Lee's Mongolian Grill in Springfield, Oregon. And I love them.
Okay. Awesome.
Real clean and just a nice, it's a nice family that owns it. And they're just great. They're just great.
Awesome. I'll link their website in the show notes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Kathleen, this has been amazing, but I've got one more question for you. I usually would say, tell me about your favorite hummus or your favorite way to eat hummus, but I'm going to ask you to start off with the hummus recipe you made today.
Well, okay. And actually, I got to tell you my favorite way to eat hummus. Okay. I just stick my finger right in the container and just, I mean, I don't need anything. But actually, what I do like is I do like to eat it with celery or on a rice cake. I love it on a rice cake. Mm. But the recipe that I made, all I did was a can of chickpeas, garbanzo beans. And I got tahini. I had never used tahini before. And I asked my sister, I was leaving the gym, headed to Market of Choice, which is like a Whole Foods. And I said, do you know what tahini is? She goes, no, it's called tahine. And I said, no, it's tahini. She goes, no, you're wrong. It's a spice. It's tahine. So I looked it up and I sent her a picture of it. I said, you were wrong. I was right. And so I added in garlic. I added in tahini, I added in lemon juice, and I added in a can of garbanzo beans with a little bit of the juice of the garbanzo beans. And I put it in my food processor. It was delightful. Mm. It was just really good. And I think next time I'll do a little less lemon, but it came out for my first time. I was very happy with it.
That's
awesome. I didn't add any salt or anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's tasty enough without the salt. And the lemon adds a little saltiness to it. People don't expect that or realize that, but citrus, lemon, and lime, a little squeeze of that just on anything kind of gives it a saltiness. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, so that was my first recipe. So now I have to think of some spices that I can put in it to have a different flavor to it. But I love hummus, and I thought I eat a lot of it, so I may as well learn how to make it so that it's more cost effective. And it goes back to our conversation about cost effective eating. And there is a way that you can eat very, very cost effectively. There's a woman, and I'm drawing a blank on her name. She wrote a book. It's How to Eat Plant-Based on $4 a Day. Now, the book was written about 15 years ago, so it's probably about $6 or $7 a day. But you could feasibly eat for a few bucks a day if you did bulk section. If you did, you know, you can go to the part of the grocery store where they have the fruits and vegetables that they're maybe a day older than they need to be, and they're going to throw them out, but they're still really good. I mean, there's all sorts of ways that you can work around that. So don't let budget be a restrictor.
Exactly.
And think of the animals, you know, don't be the one that goes to the dinner table and says, I'm sorry that I'm eating this chicken.
Yeah.
So, you don't need to be.
Nope. No, you don't. And really, when you have that why that's bigger than you, and that's why that people understanding the philosophy of veganism is so important, right? Because if you have that why that you don't want to contribute to this cruelty and the suffering in the world, you think about the animals, and we know that we don't need to eat this. We have other options.
Right.
And, you know, I'm like you were earlier, I'm sensitive to the fact that that's not true for 100% of the people on this earth. But there are many of us, like here in the United States, where it is an option and it's an easy one. And so when we combine that philosophy with this idea that, like, I can do this and, you know, it's okay, like I'm capable.
Right.
Like, how do you have a choice to actually eat the animals? It just doesn't, it goes away. You can't do it.
You know, I couldn't even imagine anymore, because I've heard of people that have not eaten animal products for a while, and then they decide to. And I think, how do you live with yourself? I mean, that's a judgment call, but I really wonder, how do you live with yourself? Because I can't even imagine what it would be like to sit there and look at that. And I just couldn't do it. And I've had people say, how long do you think you're going to do this vegan thing? It's like, well, it depends how long I live, you know, till the day that I die. I mean, mm-hmm. that's, and the sad thing, and this could be a whole podcast unto itself, but, is when my mother-in-law was in the hospital, the food that they mm-hmm. fed was just, it was horrendous. It was like, and then my aunt recently, her sister, broke her hip and 91 years old, and she was in the hospital, and just the food choices, I was like, wow, and it is Dr. Goldner who said hospital food is not good food. It's the kind of food that will keep you in the hospital.
Yep.
It's there for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Not only speaks to the influence that the pharmaceutical companies have, but it also speaks to the education that the doctors aren't receiving.
Ooh,
nutrition yes. is not at the top of their list, or even, what do they say? The average is 4 hours of nutrition in the like 47 years they spend going to school.
It's incredible. And that's why the NHA, I love what they're doing, because they've been around for 75 years, and they've been a plant-based, plant-exclusive organization. And they're expanding their horizons around the environment, around the animal. So initially it started with plant-based, but what they do is they have an annual conference, and they will actually gift to medical students the entire fee for being there, all their meals. They put them up in a room. They have to fill out an application, and they go before the board of directors. Their application goes before the board of directors, and they select two medical students that are committed to the vegan plant-based lifestyle, because they want that to go into the medical community. Yeah. There's a lot of grassroots efforts that are taking place, more than I think any of us realize. And what I encourage people to do, whatever your advocacy is, do it and keep doing it and keep mm-hmm. doing it. Go deep into your lane, whatever it is. You know, if you're a writer, then write a lot about it. If you're a speaker, go speak about it. If you love children, go help the children. If you love elderly people, think of the number of cases of dementia that could be I don't know if it can be reversed, but it could be minimized mm-hmm. and people could have a better quality of life. So whatever your advocacy is, go out and do it.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Thank you so much, Kathleen. This conversation has been incredible.
Thank you. I appreciate you inviting me here and having this conversation, because I love what you're doing. And let's have that hummus.
Yeah, let's do it.
Welcome back. Is Kathleen amazing or what? Chatting with Kathleen got me back on my gratitude practice, which really makes such an incredible difference each and every day. To connect with Kathleen, visit her websites at veganvisibility.com and veganvisibilityproductions.com. You can shoot her an email at kathleen@kathleengage.com. Find groups on Facebook called Plant-Based Eating for Health and Vegan Visibility. Connect with her on LinkedIn and follow her on Twitter at Kathleen Gage. All of these links, of course, will be in the show notes. I hope you found this episode helpful and inspiring. Please subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you're loving it, please give Did You Bring the Hummus a 5-star rating and leave a review. It's an easy way to keep supporting the show. Be sure to share these episodes with your friends. If you're finding something good here, they will too. If you're a vegan or know a vegan who would be a great fit for the podcast, follow the Be a Guest link in the show notes. Fill out the quiz and I'll be in touch. I also have a new freebie on my website. Sign up for my mailing list and get a PDF of 3 amazing vegan recipes. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Did You Bring the Hummus, and visit my website, didyoubringthehummus.com, for more information about me, updates on what I'm working on, new podcast episodes, and all things vegan. Finally, I would love to hear from you. What do you need help with? Is there a topic you want to hear covered on a future episode? DM me on Instagram or send me an email at didyoubringthehummus@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.